All right. I think we should go live. Do you think we should go live?
I guess
we are live.
Oh, wait, we are live.
Are we?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Holy moly.
He just did the Bart Simpson's deer in headlight look. Can you do that again? Like, you did that really well.
Were you talking to me?
Yes. Yeah, I was like, I need to screen cap that and meme it. Anyway.
Do you remember the one from the very first Goose podcast where somebody showed up late and somebody screen captured me and I was just like,
yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like video to make you have absolutely no vanity anymore about your face because of the expressions people catch it in. Anyway, good morning, people. Welcome to the Tuesday Live. I'm on with Jack Spierko of the Survival Podcast, John Willis from Special Operations Equipment, who I will see tomorrow. I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee. I feel like y'all are probably here because you already knew that, though. But do us a favor, like and share this. Get the word out. Drop a comment in any of the YouTube's sessions that you're seeing this in, because that helps get more people here. Today, we are basing the show around your questions, but I actually want to start with water rights, which we were talking about in the background. People were tagging me because I'm from Oregon, and all this Oregon is going after small farm stuff, so I finally read the article, and instead of reading the one everybody tagged me in, I went to OPB and read their article about it, because one of the first things I want to do is see the different perspectives. OPB is Oregon Public Broadcasting, in case you don't know. See the different perspectives, and it turns out they genuinely are shutting down small farms because you can use up to 5,000 gallons of groundwater in a commercial operation if you've tapped the groundwater in Oregon. But a small farm is not a commercial operation that can do that. And so farms that are using like 1,000 gallons of water a day to sell vegetables at the farmer's market are being told to shut down operations or dry farm or anything. What do you guys think about that?
Do you want this monetized or do you want it unmonetized?
Don't care.
Monetized.
Tens of dollars on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, I can get you canceled.
I know, but go ahead.
I like the guy's style in Colorado.
What's that?
Killdozer.
Killdozer. Oh.
Killdozer. I don't think that'll solve the problem, though.
It'll definitely delay it for a minute.
If there's about 20 of them, it definitely might slow it down, but I don't know if it fixes the problem. I think there's like multiple things here. Number one, maybe you don't know I have a well. Number two, hold the water in the land instead of, you know, letting it go off the land for the limited rainfall you get with swales, earthworks, et cetera. Increase organic matter in the soil so that you need less water. And capture rainwater in ways that they can't tell. Like all of it, you know, then use good irrigation practice. It doesn't fix the evil that they're perpetrating on people, but it does solve the problem of your farm going under. Like all of those
are
things.
Are they after well water, Nicole? Are they still allowed to use city water, for instance, or can they use water catchment?
They could still use city water if they have it, but we are talking about rural locations that may or may not have city water. And then they have to pay that bill, right? And then there are regulations in times of water scarcity that come up. The justification for doing this from the Bureau doing it is that they got grants from the government to put more staff in enforcement. And so they've been using satellite images to identify where people are improperly using water and they're shutting it down and making them go through a permitting process. At the same time, they've altered how they do the permitting process. So you have to spend thousands of dollars to get the permit to water your vegetables. If they water their vegetables for personal use, it's okay. It's that they're selling them. So I feel like there might be a donation-based solution there somewhere. And
how about get the fuck out of
water? And they're like, well, we have all these people now, so we can finally enforce the water things. And the water table is being sucked down. And that's the justification, is they don't want the groundwater to go away.
Well, isn't that the 73,000 IRS agents? So they have all these people right now. In talking to Joel Salatin and a few other people, a lot of times when they actually show up to, we need to inspect, do you have a warrant? Oh, you don't have a warrant? Oh, well, send it to me in writing. And he said it almost never comes in writing. And a lot of times the superiors or their aboves don't even know this is happening. They're just working, trying to develop a case as though their promotion and maybe even their salaries are tied to working these cases. Like, they just go out on their own and generate these cases. A lot of times when you say send it in writing, there's nothing in writing because it didn't come from top down. There was no chain of custody on how they enforce this.
The problem is there's no warrant necessary to use Google Earth.
Correct.
Right. And somebody in a small commercial farm using irrigation will stick out pretty well, at least the suspicion that that's what they're doing. I can also see this causing trouble for people who are using intensive management practices that are not using the water from a well, who look really good. Well, you must be irrigating because you don't suck as a farmer. There's a lot of people dry farming in that part of the world, and they've shown how it can be done. And some of them at really high elevations where they have less catchment to begin with because they're so far up. So I can see that being a problem too. I mean, that's what they started doing that shit down where I used to live in Arlington. They just had inspectors looking for pools and backyards and then matching them the permits for pools, because you're supposed to get a permit in Arlington to put a pool in, but it takes like 2 fucking years to get a permit to put a pool in. So everybody just puts the pool in because nobody ever did anything. And then all of a sudden they're out hunting. It's the same scenario. Like, now we have the personnel. Now we can enforce the permits, and we can do it from behind a computer screen, which is where, you know, people like that like to work, because then they don't have to get off their ass and actually do anything.
Can't back down right now because they have put their line in the sand. And if they back down, and that sets a precedence for not being able to enforce any water jurisdiction, right? So now that they're in the fight, they're like all in on the fight.
Yeah. It's like unpermitted room additions. Nobody knows you have it until you sell it, and then it becomes the next guy's problem. But like we hear all the time, people are constantly like all the rapture and the all the stuff that's supposed to happen on Monday. And I said, do you have any water stored? Do you have, 10 days of food? Do you have $1,000? If you had an emergency this weekend, do you even have $1,000? And I said, water's free. Put it in containers. It's for the most part free when your faucet runs. And they say, there's always the dude in Colorado. Well, we can't. I said, just take your downspout, pipe it into your garage, into an IBC tote, and have your overflow come out. From the outside, it still looks the same.
Yeah.
But there's always the excuse for inaction.
Yeah, and that's mostly what everybody's doing, right?
Yeah, and that's not what Nicole's talking about. Having read that, Nicole, what do you think their real, the unspoken insidious aspect of that? Is it insidious, or does somebody actually believe they're doing something the right thing ever?
The thing is, it doesn't have to be insidious, right? Like, there could be some people with some motivations in the officials. I think the motivation in Oregon from a regulatory standpoint when it comes to farms is actually anti-animal farming. And this doesn't really answer that, because it's shutting down the vegetable farming. But how do you support a state of vegans if you don't let vegetables be farmed?
Well, the giant farms grow the vegetables for the vegans. Yeah. That's the agenda. The agenda here nationwide is to kill the small farmer, what's left of him, which is the sickest thing you can do if you actually want to do what they say they want to do. But if you look at what's going on with farmland, just like regular cropland, that's the goal, is to get down. And we have people inside NRCS and shit saying this now. Like, clearly that's what they're trying to do. Probably the most benevolent organization I could come up with in the federal government is NRCS.
And this is coming from the state and not the feds, though.
Well, I understand. But so the whole Agenda 2030 thing, which I don't overbeat up, but it is a thing, is predicated on federal top down and local bottom up at the same time, because it's really easy to go in to a town council and hand them boilerplated regulations and say, pass this and we'll fund your bullshit and get that. It's way easier than getting it done through Congress and the federal government or the federal bureaucracy. So most of this type of bullshit is being done with town councils, city councils, county managers. And it's being done largely with boilerplate regs, so that the people passing the law, they don't read the fucking law. They don't even know what they passed. And then, like you said, it doesn't even have to be direct benevolence, malevolence. So some guy who's trying to justify his existence, who was just hired to be an inspector, is told, here's all the laws that you're supposed to enforce. But what does Skippy do? Skippy doesn't know anything about farming. Skippy knows I got a job. Skippy knows my boss gets happy when I have convictions or fines or whatever. So Skippy goes, oh, I went to college. I learned how to use Google Maps. Fuck. Oh, look, that guy. And then boom. And then so the malevolence can be way back several years ago when this shit was passed. And then if you just understand the system that you're manipulating, the system will do what the system does, which is the purpose of the system, to do what the system does, not what it claims to do.
Well, so and the malevolence goes back like 30 years in Oregon. So if you want to see a testing ground for how you use zoning to implement controls to force people into the cities and to switch to flip a government from red to blue,
yeah.
Look at Oregon. It was one of the testing grounds, and that zoning system that they use, the land use planning and zoning system, is based on communist models, right? I'm going to tell you this, Jack. They have paired it with an anti-CAFO law. CAFOs are bad, right? So yeah. They have an anti-CAFO law in Oregon, too. And if you are a small-scale homesteader walking your animals over dirt because they've been walking over it into the barn, your small little flock of sheep or whatever, that is a CAFO.
I'm going with John's killdozer solution at this point. Right, there is a point where people have to say, you know what, no fucking way. I'm sorry, no, you don't get to do this shit anymore.
And here's
why I say to get out of Oregon. I think all the people in Oregon in any quantity capable of making a difference already left. And if you're one of them and you're still there, you're fucking alone. You're alone. Like I've been saying, Oregon, California, and Washington State, get out. I've been saying that for 10 years. This is just another reason to get out.
Yeah, so when John asked me what's really going on there, I'm like, it does look like they are targeting small holdings so that people are not self-reliant and not locally stable.
Yes.
And I haven't dug deeper, but man, that is the end result of the system they have created.
And it could even be further than that. I mean, the outcome will be the same, that nutrient density, you're going to get a much more nutrient-dense food product from the small-scale farmer. You're also not going to get vaccinations from the small-scale farmer, but from large ag, you are going to. They're trying to pass or did pass recently a bill in Tennessee that they have to label the vaccinations that are on produce, specifically lettuce. And people were very up in arms over that. But what that forced them to do is to admit that they are already on the shelf with a vaccinated product in the grocery store. They just hadn't disclosed by making them put the actual dosages on there. They at the same time have to disclose that they actually have vaccinated the product that is on the shelf. And they said in-house there, they said that, yes, these products are in the store right now to consumer.
See, I don't think it'll matter, though. I think they'll do it anyway.
Yes,
they don't care that Tennessee passed the law. For 5 years, we were told GMO corn was only being fed to livestock when it was totally in our food supply.
Yeah.
Right. 5 years they with a straight face. Oh, no, this is only used for animal feed.
Just like
and then 5 years into it, when it came out that they were doing it, they said, well, it's GRS, generally recognized.
They just passed a law in Tennessee or a bill saying no more chemtrails in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to stop that? They have no enforcement over it.
Yeah. Enforce that.
Yeah. So 30 years ago, I was looking at moving to Germany because I was, and I was already liberty minded, by the way, because I felt like I might have more freedom there. It might be a better place. And then I went there and I lived for a little while and it was way less free, way less free. Then I came back and just accidentally ended up in Tennessee and the culture was so much more free here that 6 weeks later I went home. I sold everything in my house. I packed up into a trailer and moved out here. And that was 17 years ago. So this anti-freedom movement in Oregon it's been very apparent for a long time. And it's interesting to see it. Like I told my sister when all the fighting broke out in 2021, I was like, did you ever think the Civil War would start in Portland, Oregon? But then when you think about it, you're like, of course it did. Okay, here's a comment. East side of Oregon joins Idaho or becomes Jefferson. If the Jefferson State ever came to be, I would actually seriously consider going back over to that desert. I actually like the climate in Eastern Oregon.
Yeah, don't bet on it.
Yeah, they didn't get it done in the 40s.
I mean, I think a lot of this whole idea that, like, this piece of this state's going to leave its state and go join the other state, this is like adult fantasy land shit. Like, I don't see – I'm not against it. I think there's actually a lot of power in it, other than you are strengthening at the federal level the state you've left. I don't think people realize that. That, you know, you're locking that state into being the other side as two senators forever. But I get people's desire to change their situation, and if that's what they want, fine. But I just don't see it actually happening. I think Texas seceding is a long shot, and I think it'll happen before Eastern Oregon becomes part of Idaho. I really do. I don't even see how you get that done. Like, the only state I know that can do that, and this is a lot of the mythology about Texas comes from this, Texas does have the ability to do one thing that no other state does. In our agreement when we join the union, we can break it's either into three or four states if we want to. Like, we do not have this bullshit about Texas has the right to secede. No, we do not. There's no clause for that. There is a clause that would allow Texas to just say, we're going to be East and West Texas, thereby doubling the number of senators that represent the region. And if you broke it, gerrymandered it the right way, that could be kind of effective. That's the only state I know that can do something like that, though, without unless you're willing to bring in a guard. Right. Which you're going to ask who, the Idaho governor to do or the Oregon governor that you're telling to go screw to do? How's that? Like, I don't know how you pull that off. I guess 1,000 killdozers might do it.
When I lived in the Jefferson State, they were already identifying as the Jefferson State, but it was also clearly already a very difficult list. Like, there have been votes to make it happen, but it doesn't happen until the Senate allows it to happen.
Yeah.
So that's a big job, where just moving to Tennessee or Texas or Florida or somewhere else is not as hard as making the Jefferson State.
What about a bunch of little solar panels and batteries and loudspeakers up in the mountains of Oregon that play the banjo music from Deliverance when a motion detector is tripped?
You'd probably get in trouble for leaving garbage in the wilderness.
I don't know, man. If you've ever been on a gravel road and you hear that music in your head, you're already worried. If you actually heard it coming out of the trees, but dang, 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 dang. You might turn around. And, of course, some of the guys that work there might be like, where you at? I mean, I don't know. But I don't know. I mean, like, that was the number one joke people made when they came to my place in Arkansas, that when they were on the way up the road, they thought they heard banjo music. And that every single person, the first time they came out to that place, was intimidated by it. I think there are some things that could be done. Like, the code enforcer can only enforce the code if he's willing to go to the place where the code needs to be enforced. And there might be, you know, Sherwood Forest with the magical wind chimes and the ghosts were in the forest. I don't know. There's something there. Or maybe, I don't know, when the enforcers come, put up a thing that says there's free drugs available because the drug guys left them so the other druggies will come. I don't know. There's like all kinds
of. Yeah, I don't know. I never heard banjos in rural Oregon, but I definitely hear them in Tennessee. Prime Prepper says, good morning. Thank you for that super comment chat sticker thingy.
Dang, 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 dang.
Could a state secede and be left alone? Would the government really let them? Nope. Probably not. No. I mean, I think we tried that once. Somebody tried that once here. It was not a fun time.
You'd have to put it into a context that made it very politically untenable for them to interfere. I do think, and it's not because I live here, I do think that the state with the greatest ability to do it would be Texas, because unlike the other states, like, if let's say Tennessee did it. Okay, Tennessee, you don't want any electricity. Goodbye, click. Oh, by the way, you don't want any trucks bringing shit into your state since you're landlocked. Click. But if you have a state that has its own power and some of the largest ports in the country, it's a little bit more able to stand up to that. And I think that's why you do see some states that have kind of that bent as well, saying we want to be part of that. because then you would have access to at least the shipping. The grid would be a very long-term project. I mean, that's something that they have against every state but Texas. They'll just shut your power off. They don't have to blow anything up. They don't have to send in a tank. They just say, you know what, people, when you fix your governor's brain, we'll turn your power back on. And I think they would do that instantly. Like, that would be immediately what they would do is they could even, like, you have power generation in Tennessee, but the grid itself being tied in could be shut down from the outside. And that is the biggest vulnerability that people have.
Yep. Oh, somebody got the answer. I love watching the banter back and forth in the chat there. Well, I didn't realize we were going to go that long on the Oregon thing. I started digging in yesterday because for once I wasn't driving, I was riding. And I was like, well, now I have time to read all this stuff I've been meaning to read because, yeah. I think that's why John always has a chauffeur, right, John?
What's that?
That's why you always have a chauffeur, right?
Why?
So you can answer stuff on your phone while you go?
Yeah, my net keeps clicking in and out. Like, I don't know if you're hearing it. There's thunder happening that is literally shaking the building. Yeah, Amanda drives when we go places on the weekends so that I can social media and emails.
Yep. I mean, line in the sand for Grandma Merkel, not leaving Oregon, but I volunteer to help anybody move out. You know, I've got a decent set of listeners in the Medford area. I've met a couple of them last time I was there, so... Y'all need to figure out who you are and connect. I obviously took off a while ago.
See, the philosophy there, though, is flawed. It's never the nutters that leave. There's all this resistance to this idea of people should stay and fight because the liberal loons will come to your state. The people that leave are never the liberal loons. Liberal loons stay, and I think this idea of you should stay, the person saying that is always somebody that doesn't live there.
Yeah.
It's always somebody that's done it themselves or grew up somewhere where it's not a thing telling somebody else that they should stay in the middle of this lunacy. And the reality is we need those people to move to states like Tennessee and Texas. I know that people seems counterintuitive, but you want liberals in Texas? Go to Dallas. Go to Austin. Go to Houston. Liberals are born in cities. Cities are liberal factories.
People that leave have the means to leave.
Yeah.
So obviously they have something going on that they could add to, you know, your area. And if they don't have the means to leave, they're definitely survivors. They were able to get out of there and, you know, get to another location.
Yeah, Jim says, my business is here in Washington, so I stay. I'm going to throw out this hypothetical. And this is what got me up in arms a little bit about this yesterday is, okay, so you've spent 5 years building your farmer's market business. You are making a full-time income. You employ 4 to 5 people in your community, and you're feeding your community. And some yahoo comes in and shuts off your ability to produce your product. And there's nothing you can do about it but appeal for years and spend lots of money trying to get a permit. Mm-hmm. Do you stay there and fight? Or do you, having gained all the skills to start a local food mecca, mm-hmm. go somewhere where you can just restart your business? It's going to be a pain in the butt. It's going to be a lot of work, but you don't have to fight uphill through all the bureaucracy and through people who don't want you there. What do you do?
It's Atlas Shrugged. You already built it once. You can build it. What took you 4 years to build, you can do in a year right now. You know, and you know how to do it already. I said for 20 years, I need to leave California. I need to leave California. I need to leave California. We get guys all the time that say that. And I'm like, look, don't wait till you're 30 to leave California. You're unencumbered when you're younger. You can move faster. You have the ability to put in more hard work and longer hours. So you can build it that much quicker. Just get out of there. And I don't tell people what they should do if they ask me. I tell them what I did.
Correct. Correct. That's I mean, I do that with product recommendations. Well, I did buy this, so that's what I would recommend, right? Yeah. I think there's another thing that's really close to what Nicole said, but it's really important to think about if you're in one of these positions. Let's say you have your business, like I think it was Jim there in the chat, I'm not leaving because my business is here, right? Okay, fine. So your business is at risk every single freaking day you're in a state that hates business. And the day that Nicole's talking about can come any given day and you won't know when it is. And they're also siphoning the shit out of your revenue with taxes in a state like Oregon that are onerous against businesses. And your life with those five employees is really risky because, like, the best day of your employee's life in a lot of these states is the day that you fire them. And that's probably, and the worst day was the day you hired them because there was going to be a consequence to fire them. So what you could do is move the hell out of the state on your own terms. If it was a farmer business, then you don't want to move, you know, at the wrong time of year. You want to transition as rapidly as possible. So is that going to be easier because you've decided you've had enough of their bullshit and they don't deserve your money and your time and your talent and your employment of people that live there anymore? Or is it going to be easier the day that somebody puts a stop notice on your door and all your revenue shut down overnight and there's nothing you can do about it except, like Nicole said, go begging like alms to the poor, to the court to help you, who works for the people that are screwing you? So I think if you're staying in these states, that's fine. I don't tell anybody what to do. But you're taking a massive risk, and the more you have to lose, the bigger the risk you're taking. But go ahead and stay there. That's fine. But what will happen is that will be the person that eventually reaches out to people like us to try to help them. And we might feel like we want to, but in the end, there's not much we can do. Right? I mean, I've literally, some of these small towns, some of the shit they've done to people, I have flooded mayor's offices, city council offices with phone calls. We brought down, like, it was in Oregon. It was a lady that was dying of cancer that wanted to have a yard sale they shut down. We shut down their courthouse for 2 weeks with inbound calls. You know what it did? Made everybody feel good. It got the lady a bunch of donations so she didn't have to have the yard sale, but it didn't fix the problem. And so I'm a belief that a lot of these places, this problem isn't going to be fixed because the people that run the place don't want the problem fixed. They love the problem. To them, the problem is their solution. So I just say, get the fuck out. But do what you want.
K-Bonk says, thump the thumb. I think that's in celebration of having heard a really loud thunder clap hit. At first, I thought there was like a fan hitting his microphone. And no, then I realized we're hearing like the boomers, which are, they're heading here next. So I feel like the last two live streams with Jack have involved like crazy weather. Didn't I have to move like three times and use all of my internet options last time?
He means hit the thumbs up button, though. That's what
I know.
Means. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I want everybody to do it, so that's why I'm saying it. Hit the thumbs up, folks. We got a bunch of people watching, and we ain't got near enough likes.
Yeah. We didn't have a business or anything and couldn't afford to live in Virginia Beach. We decided to leave on our own terms 3 years before we projected to go into the red with the family budget. Yep.
Good luck.
How long will you continue to pick up needles in front of your business before you close the business? So my sister 2 weeks ago went and stayed in a downtown hotel in Portland, Oregon, because she was visiting family there. And she was really surprised that hotels in downtown were about $100 a night cheaper. And she stayed in that hotel one night and went out to a suburb and paid $100 more. And she was like, I couldn't believe how much it had changed. Because when we grew up, what that city did was go from kind of a rough city to super nice, like art studios and coffee shops and all of this vibrance. And it's like, it's all gone. It's just all gone. And it's depressing. And I had to get out of there. There's people living in tents everywhere. That's what she told me.
Oh yeah, you can see there's whole YouTube channels of just the crazy shit going on there. It's just like the BART train system in the Bay Area or the subways in New York. Like, you know that there's going to be a violent crime that happens on a daily basis there. You just roll those dice.
Did you see the lady that was, while she was waiting for a train today, she had a bike lock?
So I didn't see that.
While she waits for the train, she bike locks herself to the pole. So that somebody can't throw her in the tracks because it's happening.
Every day.
I think you got to leave. I don't see anything that makes me stay in a place where I have to fucking lock myself to a pole so some random ass fuck doesn't throw me in front of a subway train. And, you know, New York City, Nicole, is exactly like you just described Oregon. I managed a territory that included New York City from about 1999 to 2004. When I first went there, I was like, I don't want to go. This is going to suck. And I went there and I went, this is nothing like what I was told. Because I knew the New York City of the 80s and the 70s from the TV. It was wonderful. There was no problems. I rode subways out to Brooklyn and back. I used to come in, so I didn't have to drive into the city. I would come into Grand Central out of Rye. I would use the subway all day, subway and cab all over the place with my reps. No trouble, no problems. Amazing place to be. Didn't smell good, but it's a big city. But other than that, I never felt like I really needed to watch where I was going other than not getting run over by a car or some shit. And you couldn't pay me to go to that freaking place today. There's no way. And so that happened in totally different places, but in the same timeline in a totally different way.
Do you remember the Unloose the Goose episode where we were talking about this with Sal, who was not getting out of New Jersey?
Oh, that's one
and
of my greatest.
All of a sudden he was like, OF, I have to leave. Like, he was just like, the look on his face was like, I'm moving. And like 2 weeks later, he was out.
It was 2 weeks. I'm, they're not getting rid of me. I'm staying here. This is the greatest city in the world. Blah, 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 blah. I'm moving to Florida. Like, I was like,
I'm on the wall and I'm out.
If he would just have the same epiphany about Bitcoin Cash, we'd be good. Right. Like, I mean, I credit people who will go out and say, I'm not doing this. And when they really think about it and when they really realize that's a mistake, they'll not just do it. They'll come out and publicly say, okay, I was wrong. I'm getting the hell out of here or whatever it is. Like, I respect the shit out of him for that, actually.
Yeah. Well, and he just, like, cut bait. He was like, I'm out. I moved. I found a new place, and I'm here now. And that was it. It was over.
I promise you he ain't going back.
Yeah, no.
There was a little mumbling of that when he first left. Well, it's just till COVID's over. I'm like, okay, we'll see. Yeah.
No, once you breathe that air, like, when we left the California border and hit the Arizona border, like, the air changed. We stopped at a gas station and bought $100 of fireworks and launched the fireworks from the parking lot of the gas station. And people from the gas station stood out there and lit fireworks with us. You'd have had, like, you'd be in jail for a year just for having the fireworks in Arizona, right when we crossed
Arizona,
the border.
Okay.
It's not dry there at all, by the way.
But in California, like, they have a task. They have a task force for kids that just have fireworks. They didn't even ignite them in San Diego.
I got a good fireworks story from when I was a young adult. We used to have this driving range right across the street from us for hitting golf balls and stuff, and it was completely abandoned at night. So we went out there one night. We were just shooting bottle rockets off and shit. And so we started trying to hit the building that – you bought the bucket of balls from by setting the bottle rockets on like a brick and shit. It's not going to hurt anything. It wasn't going to burn it. It's a bottle rocket. Well, I light the bottle rocket as the cop cruiser comes around the corner and I'm doing the mental math in my head at the speed the car's moving. I'm like, oh, this is not good. Freaking right in the window of the cop car that he had down. Right. At least it was the back window. Right. But he was not amused. He was not amused at all. But apparently he'd actually didn't see me light it. I thought he did. And so he knew we were all there. He took the bottle rockets away. But I guess he was legit enough that, like, since he didn't know who lit it and we weren't about to tell him, that he actually didn't cite us for anything.
That's not how it would go today, though.
No, it's not. No, no. But, I mean, it was like, I'm like, oh, go, go. No. And I should have kicked the fucking thing, but I didn't. Like, I was so brain locked with the math, like, being perfect. Like, you could just see it in advance that this was going to happen. But the window I never saw come. I thought we were going to hit the side of the car or some shit.
Yeah.
Comment, instead of staying and fighting, leave along with all the other able people, leaving only the disabled people, which will cause government to collapse faster.
It's reverse literally
power driven.
That's already happening.
Yeah. It is literally Atlas Shrugged. That is exactly, you don't have a force field hiding the place.
Yeah.
People have just left and started whole communities and they're doing business to business. Like, we have there's 100 farms that have come into just Benton County here that nobody even knows they're there. And when you look at these places, they're beautiful. They're doing huge business and they're not doing business. Most of the locals have no idea that they're even here. They just don't, they're doing their own thing. And they're building community and they're doing business with each other. They don't have to do business with the Walmart people.
Yeah. You know, the state response to that is to retroactively go after you for future taxes after you've left the state because you are a resident of their state.
OK, California says 8 years.
I wonder how that's working for Elon.
That's different. He moved a corporate structure. They're not able to do shit.
Yeah, my friend 1031 rental properties out of there and got a note from Oregon saying, eventually, when you sell all of this stuff as an old man, you need to pay tax on part of the increase that happened on your real estate while you were in Oregon.
When we moved here, I had been in Tennessee for 2 years, and a deputy sheriff walks in to serve me papers from the state of California. The DMV said that I had not paid registration on my Super Duty truck for 2 years, and I owed $1,300. It was $1,680. It was $1,680 is what they wanted. And if I didn't pay it, they were going to put me in prison up to a year, and they were going to impound and sell the vehicle. The truck had already been registered in the state of Tennessee for 2 years. That's how they knew where to send the paperwork. Imagine how many people just pay that, but they're absolutely crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how California will enforce anything in another state. They will try.
The same way they enforce child support payment.
Do you remember when we had to run a fundraiser for John Dowie because Massachusetts seized his bank account in New Hampshire, Nicole?
Yes, I do.
Yep.
I do remember that.
They will seize your assets. On this thing about leaving, I just want to make – this is the strongest case I have for getting the fuck out of California, and I will just put the whole West Coast in this. What I have on the screen for those watching the video version of this is a truck rate from U-Haul. To go from from Dallas to LA one way, 20-foot truck rental, $1,918. Going the other way, let me share this tab now, $3,449. The same truck, the same two sides of the transaction, over $2,000 difference. It's very expensive if you want to take that truck from L.A. to Dallas and leave it in Dallas. But if you want to take that truck from Dallas to L.A., they'll practically give it to you for free comparable to other rates. Now, why do you think that is? That's because when that truck goes to fucking Dallas, it's not coming back.
There were so many people leaving California during 2019, 2020, and even beyond. You couldn't get U-Haul trucks to leave the state. There were people driving to Las Vegas, day renting them, stealing them basically back in California and going, hey, U-Haul, your truck is in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. We know because there's 20 trucks here in Tennessee of people that moved here. Those trucks have never left here.
No. But I guarantee you, if you want to rent one going from Camden to anywhere in California, or even just anywhere close to the West Coast, they will give it to you almost for free.
You could start a business.
You'll get it for $800-900. I guarantee some of them, I bet you, if you call them up, like that's just the rate online. Yep. You call up the local place and go, do you have one that really needs to go back to Cali? Can we cut? I guarantee you they'll cut that rate. I guarantee you they will.
I'll bet you they would pay you to take them back in.
They might. I mean, there should be a business in this, like, except you need a CDL, even if it's not CDL worthy to commercially transport, because it would seem like just, do we have some cargo that needs to go? We'll give it to you if you'll drop this load off or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, John. When you moved from Cali, what did you use to take your belongings?
A V10 Super Duty on 37-inch tires that got six miles to the gallon up through Arizona with the 24-foot trailer. We got 4 miles to the gallon. A Ford Explorer with a open 6x10 foot trailer. And I was stupid, man. We moved so heavy. We were 3,000 pounds overweight on the big trailer. I moved a ton of gym equipment. We packed up. I brought probably 200 snakes with me. The Explorer just had cups of reptiles all through there. And at some point, something got out. I'm sure Amanda will chime in here. I don't remember what got out, a boa or something. We just moved them in kit bags and clothes bags. And I have, you know where all that shit is? It's in my other building. We've never unpacked most of that stuff. I left an Avon. I left a Zodiac F470. I left an entire dive locker, enough gear to put probably 16 dudes in the water. I left parachutes. I left tons. Like, we brought probably, I don't know, a tenth of what we actually owned. I abandoned the rest of it, just called friends, said, hey, come get it. And all that stuff that was important enough to bring, I bought all brand new stuff over time. Like, we were so busy on the ground working that we never unpacked it. I still have three buildings, and one of them is full of stuff that's never been unpacked from the move from California. That's what I'm talking about. Especially when you're younger, you're unencumbered. And a lot of times, if you look around and your life is cluttered, like mine always is, if a tornado wiped this place off of the earth, we would rebuild it, and it would almost be a relief because we wouldn't have to. People have an emotional attachment. You want to make generational money, set up storage units. People have an emotional attachment to stuff that they don't want to see, but they will pay for every month. Like when their parents pass or their past relationship or whatever that is, they won't throw it away, but they will pay to not have to see it for hundreds of years.
That's true. That's true. I did have a good friend one time. He's not been around much lately. His name's Chris Prater. He had a really good business idea, and since he's retired and he's never going to do it, I'll give it away to somebody who wants to do it. There is a lot of stuff like that. He was an auctioneer, so he saw people fight over the little piddly shit. Like, they would sell the expensive shit for money, but everybody wanted something like grandma's rolling pin, and they would fight over the freaking rolling pin and stuff. He's kind of a crafty guy and does a lot of little handyman stuff, and also he would take things like a rolling pin, cut it up in a bunch of little thin slabs, and make like shaker boxes out of it.
Cool.
And then that way everybody could have a piece of grandma's rolling pin, and it was like personalized. He would do things like he would take a limb off of a tree that grandpa planted, cut a bunch of slabs on it, throw it on a CNC router, and make wall plate covers for your light switch. So every time you walked in that room and turned that light on, you was touching that tree. And it was such a great idea, but he never actually did anything with it. I think somebody with like a lathe and a CNC machine and a few other tools blow up a business like that with probably 20 standard products. And like, you need a certain amount of stock to be able to get a certain amount of product out of it. But I had him, we had a tree like that that my father-in-law planted, a pecan. And I just gave him a bunch of limbs off that tree. He took a little mini lathe and he made a ton of pulls, like for ceiling fans and lights.
I remember you saying
that. And I have one of those on every ceiling fan and every light in the house. And I gave them to all the family members. And every time you reach up and touch that, you're touching your past. So there's your business opportunity of the day. Because whoever actually does that is going to freaking crush it. And I ain't going to do it.
That's a great idea. I know when I moved from Oregon, my only regret in how I did it, because I came with one small U-Haul trailer behind a Subaru, is I wish I had packed everything up I knew I wanted to take that had sentimental value or was like, I actually moved with a specific potato peeler, which to this day I have because it's the only potato peeler I've ever had that really works on carrots. Okay. It's like a stupid thing. But it's this big, right?
Yeah.
So I did all that, and then I threw everything out in my yard and had a big yard sale. And in hindsight, what I should have done was pack that stuff up in one room in the house and had an estate sale because I would have made more money. But if I would have, like, if I had sold half of what I brought in addition, it would have made everything easier. And I've never regretted, like, I even got rid of a pretty nice record vinyl collection, like original Beatles stuff. And I don't regret it at all because that helped finance the move for me. And what do I really need with a shelf full of vinyl records? I don't.
But now you're in a position where it would cost you money to do that. You make too much money to deal with people bickering over selling some stuff because a roll-off dumpster can be there for $200. And I know people have an emotional attachment to stuff, but if you like, the answer is always make more money. If you are paying yourself, like you always hear, I know what I'm worth. You're only worth what you think you're worth if you can consistently make that. And if you consistently make $50, $100, $1,000 an hour, whatever it is, $1,000 a day, there is no time to sell a bunch of bullshit. Just put that stuff in the dumpster, put it on the curb. The better, if you want somebody to take it, if you give it away, they won't take it. But if you put it on the curb and say it's $20, they'll steal it immediately.
Oh, we used to do that.
Yeah,
we had this true. Old we do it. Couch. It yeah. stunk and all. And we put it out free on the thing. And my old crusty granddad's like, put a sign for – it was like they were a week. You know, yeah. It's like, it's going to rain. Put a sign for sale on it. It'll be gone before the weekend's over. And you're like, Grandpa's crazy. And Grandma's like, just do what he says. So I went out, made a for sale sign, put it on the damn thing. And by Saturday morning, it was gone.
You could do a whole YouTube channel proving that out over and over. And people would yeah. watch it. And it would monetize like that.
And if you want to make a little money on it, because John's right, it isn't worth my time to have a big estate sale here if I was going to move. I can pack what I want and leave, and I can pay an auction company to come in and do it. They will take much of the profit, but not all. But well, they do all the work.
When you do that, what happens when you do that to the stuff that doesn't sell? Do they take care of that?
Yeah, they take it to the – you have to negotiate it, but you can have them take it okay. to be donated or the dumpster. Absolutely.
Because as long as I don't have to do jack shit, I would – you know, even if I make $1,000, it's $1,000 I didn't have and I made a phone call.
Yeah, more but money like, equals more services, right? You're going to lose in air quotes more, but you don't lose all that time.
We went to an estate auction a few years ago that was about 20 minutes from here, and it was a hunting club. And this husband and wife had a barn dominium that was like the trophy room slash bar and kitchen area for guests and stuff. And he had every animal from around the world, just beautiful place. And he had, I think there was like 300 acres there. And he had 18 of those R2-D2 trap and skeet launchers that would just do all the stuff. And they were breeding,
those things are cool.
They were breeding pheasant and growing out pheasant and stuff. And they had an RV packed with everything that they were taking. The auctioneers came in, auctioned it off. And I was talking to the owner and he said, we're driving away no matter what happens, no matter whether this sells, no matter whether if we have to break the property into three parcels, we are leaving here today and never coming back. They were already emotionally set. A pro golfer from Memphis, of all places, came in and bought the entire property. But they did auction a bunch of stuff. I didn't. Anytime I've been to an auction, the thing I want to bid on is never. It's always the last thing. It's a whole day commitment to go to a estate auction to try to get the thing that you want, it seems like.
So just when you said the pheasants, it reminded me of another thing from many, many years ago that the government fucked up. So when I was a young kid coming up in Pennsylvania, we used to go pheasant hunting. And my uncles and all used to tell me about how great the pheasant hunting was just 10 years ago and all the way back to World War II. And I'm like, what happened? And they said, well, you know how like everywhere you turn around up here, we have a gun club? I'm like, yeah. They said, so all the gun clubs used to raise pheasants and then go out and stalk them.
Yep.
And the state government, Pennsylvania state government, Commonwealth, came in and said, well, you can do that, but you have to put them where we tell you to. So all the gun clubs said, go get fucked. Because they were putting them on, like, one thing Pennsylvania had going for it, I don't even know what it has now, but at the time, tons of public hunting ground, tons of it. So they were stalking it on public hunting ground. There were plenty of members of the public that weren't members of the club that could go hunt those places. But they were also the places that the people that were members of the club knew to go hunt. So they weren't about to basically the state didn't even say, we'll tell you where to put them. The state said, we will show up 4 weeks before the season opens. You give them to us and we'll stock them.
Yeah.
And the response was universally, go get fucked. And now if you want hunting like that now, like it used to be, you have to pay to go to like a preserve where it's all private land and they stock their own birds.
That's what this was. So you can buy pheasant, you can buy any kind of game bird, just like we order chicks.
Yep.
And they come in and you have them in this big pen and it just has like black bird netting over the top. And they live in there for, you know, a couple months until they're big enough. They draw them to feed, take them and put them out in the field. And then as you hunt or your dog flushes, then it's just sport.
Yep. And when they don't get shot, a lot of them just go back to the cage and get restocked. Yeah. So it's a pretty good model.
We were at a flea market and there was a golden pheasant and I'd never seen one. And it's this beautiful creature. And I bought this thing and I'm like, he's kind of close enough to the chickens. And the second we let him out, that thing was gone. We never saw that $100 bird again. Same thing with the peacock. I brought a peacock here and I thought, man, he'll probably be friends with the turkey. And he was for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he was on the roof. He was on my car. That thing was all over the place, man.
Because you can do the pheasants, but you need to get them as chicks and brood them like you do chickens, and then they will home for you. But,
yeah.
I mean, they'll be just like a chicken. I mean, they'll just hang out. They'll eat out of your hand and all. I will tell you one thing. If you ever go on a pheasant hunt and you've never been before and you knock down a rooster pheasant and it's not dead, do not pick it up by its head. It will spur your ass in a way that you cannot even imagine a chicken three times as big doing. They are vicious. Because that's the first one I ever shot. That's what I did. I shot it, I ran over and I grabbed it. And the only thing I'd ever shot up till that day, like real hunting, was doves. So you shoot a dove, you grab it by the head and snap its head off. So I grabbed that sucker, and he put three holes on both sides of my arm in about a quarter of a second.
Gotcha.
So that was a good ask me how I know situation.
It is. It hurts.
Yeah, I went up to an injured blue heron once.
Oh, shit.
And I got its beak through my cheek.
Yeah, there's.
And I grabbed its head, and we're just looking at each other like, now what? And I'm like, well, I'm not letting you pull back out because that's going to rip an even bigger hole. So that blue heron did not make it. But at the gym, they called me Pecker Face the next day.
Pecker Face. Has the statute of limitations on a murder of a federally protected bird run out?
I don't know.
I'm sure it has.
I was going to get in trouble for that one.
It was in Oregon, though, wasn't it?
No, it was here.
Oh, okay.
I had an old guy that took care of my snakes in the shop in Oceanside. And I'd come in. We had in the back room, it was probably, I don't know, maybe 10 by 10 feet. And I had some big slide front 10-foot python. Well, it had to be at least 10 by 10 because the pages were 10. I had a Burmese, and I had an albino Burmese back there. And she was probably 16 feet. Like a real true 16 feet, big, big animals. And we would just feed them huge rabbits and piglets and stuff. And I came in one morning, and when I walked back there was like blood smeared up on the wall, like all over the wall, like somebody had just grabbed a rag. And when I finally got a hold of Matt, I'm like, what in the world was going on? He had gone down to a lagoon and caught some shorebird and thought he would feed it to this thing. And the snake, it was already dead.
Yeah.
The snake couldn't get it in there. So he just smeared it all over the place, but it looked like a crime scene in there. So shorebirds are not the chosen animal to feed to your pythons.
Okay. Since we're doing weird bird stories, I have no idea why this is the case, what's in their meat, but we used to hunt everything. And one of the things we would often pick up kind of proxy with duck hunting was woodcock, which are these little bitty birds. And when you dress one, they basically take the breast. It looks like a dove breast, but it's darker meat. A freaking dog will point it, will tell you where it is, will not pick it up, and will not eat it. Like, they're sitting under the table. You're eating some doves. You throw them a hunk of dove. He's like, well, you throw them a hunk of the woodcock, and they spit it out, and they look at you like, what the hell is wrong with you? They will not touch it. I can't really – I think they taste very similar. I can't tell the difference, but something in a woodcock – is anti-canine.
That's weird.
That is weird, useless knowledge, but you brought it up.
We need to have a whole weird, useless knowledge segment we do, because that could be funny. That would make good TikToks.
Well, you can eat every songbird on the West Coast.
I will admit I've eaten grackle. It ain't bad.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, we made
it's
the
better
kids
than you think. Red-winged blackbird's really good.
Yeah, if you kill it, you're going to eat it. Like we tried, I think we wiped out the whole migration one year with the BB guns, but as our kids got older, we made them eat anything that they weren't supposed to shoot that got shot.
New debate knows what a woodcock is. That's the slang for them, timber doodles. They will make you embarrassed as a shotgun shooter. The way that they move through that's why they call them that. They're only as big as a dove, and you can totally see what they are cuz they have that long beak that kind of, and they fly. They don't fly like a typical bird. They fly like they're sitting, and they can do shit that's just absolutely freaking crazy. Hey, Hardway, Alaska says sandhill cranes are great meat. That is the ribeye in the sky. Ribeye in the sky. Like, you get two big pieces of breast, and they're like a 20-ounce ribeye. Both of those, and that's the only thing apparently that's really good to eat on them is the breast meat, but. That's a big deal. And they do a lot of hunts out in West Texas. I've never done it, but David and I have talked about going to West Texas for it.
Well, I think that needs to happen.
Spotted owl scrambled eggs.
Yeah, that would get you in trouble. Right.
That doesn't sound right at all.
That would get you in trouble.
the show I actually have been kicking around doing, Nicole, is like great thinkers, one-liners, like the Iron Law Bureaucracy. Stafford Beer, the purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do. Like just going through a bunch of stuff. Bonhoeffer's theory of stupidity, all of those things like that, because I think that a lot of the problems we talk about, if you get those things locked into your brain, you stop seeing them as problems and realize you need to get out of the way, because some of this stuff that we talk to ourselves about changing, we're not going to change. It's not in our lifetimes, especially those of us that are halfway through them.
So it's like the philosophical version of the Art of War.
Yes. Yes. It's a pragmatism or a stoicism or whatever, but like all these, you know, all these, the Stafford Beer is the guy that coined that systems thinking concept of the purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do. So all of these systems that people are trying to fix, like the healthcare system, the education system, et cetera, they're trying to fix it under the idea that the education system really is to create free thinking young adults who can go out and cope with society. But that's not what the purpose of the system is. And as soon as you realize the system's purpose is what it's already doing, then you realize, another great thinker, in the words of Buckminster Fuller, right, what do you need to do? You need to go out and create a competing system that replaces and obsoletes the existing system. You can't fix something that's already working as designed.
Yeah.
John looks mad now.
No, I'm reading the thing about Aikido. I'm just going to use my Seagal stuff on Sunny this weekend.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, can I video that?
That'll be fun.
We need to video that for promotion.
I want to see Sonny with John on the ground with his knee behind the shoulder blade. with a nine like this, like he's got him down and he's also like, yeah, I've been through that drill. It hurts.
The problem with fighting the system is that the richest people with the most lawyers want that system.
Correct. Correct. And I think it doesn't even have to be that nefarious. I think that when you have an entrenched system, change is very difficult. Look at some of the stuff that doesn't require regulations to change, that we could change that for the better of everybody involved. Look at something like broad acreage cropping. Switching to cover crop rotational multi-species models with intermittent grazing is the best thing for the farmer, the customer, and the environment. There's not a single regulation that makes this hard to do. The NRCS will give you money to plant the cover crop. The NRCS will give you more money than the seed costs for the intercropping cover crop. And it's almost impossible to get done. Why? Seven generations of farmers being sold to by chemical input advisors who are agronomists, convincing them that if they don't have bare dirt in the spring, they're killing the earth. So that's a psychological impediment, but it's an entrenched system, right? So you have to create the parallel. The one guy that does it, when he starts making money and he buys a new car and his kids go off to college and they come back and work on the farm and the other guy's kids left and never come back, all of a sudden they start to pay attention. But you have to put the model that works where it's visible. I know a guy up in Iowa. That is, actually it's Missouri, it's just under the Iowa border. That's doing amazing things with strip cropping, but I can't document it because he's afraid they'll come shut him down. This dude's older, he's going to die someday, and all of the knowledge he's gained doing this is going to go with him.
Well, they can't sell Roundup Ready seeds and glyphosate with those programs.
No. But my point is that we, like a lot of things you say, well, we need to get a new law, or we need to repeal a law, or this.
No.
Like, you can do this right now, but nobody, well, not gonna say nobody's doing it. More and more people are doing it. But this battle's been going on for 30 years, and there's nothing in the way except the brain.
Yeah, because once you have bought into a system and benefited from it, and you think you're benefiting from it, you can't see how any other system could work. That's, like, something everybody has to fight against, right? Doing things because we've always done it this way.
Why are Canadian geese protected?
Because in the 80s, there were almost none of them left.
Is that why?
Yeah, they were so knocked back in population that, like, in Pennsylvania, like, you know, you get a deer tag and a turkey tag. We had a goose tag. You shoot one goose a year. And now every golf course has 8,000 birds on them. That's an overcorrection, right? Like, I think the limit on geese in Texas during the season is 6 a day.
We were just somewhere doing antique store stuff, and without fail, Amanda's Google Maps or whatever she uses will always take us through every small residential area in the world. There's 100 geese. They had a geese crossing sign from this pond to pond, and we sat there for 5 minutes while the geese crossed the road.
When we lived in a place called Northampton, just north of Allentown, for a few years, they had a really pretty piece of the river that came through there, and it had like a paved river walk. The spring was awesome because you could just watch people getting tore up by mama geese, man.
Yep.
And if you don't run from them when they come after you, they back off. But if you give an inch, then they go full on. So we would sit there and take bets like, look at that dude. He's going to run. They're going to get him. And you knew right where they were kind of positioned. And we'd be sitting there like basically betting like which guy was going to run, which guy was going to get tore up, whatever. You know, you see a guy coming through with like a 4-pound Yorkshire Terrier walking on a string. You're like, oh, he's toast. The dog's toast. Everybody's toast.
Hey, Green Country Agroforestry, I saw you said you were shipping out seed corn earlier. Is that what you do? Do you grow seed corn or do you farm? I'm not familiar with what you do.
We'll wait for that answer.
I got attacked by a swan as a kid. I don't like geese.
Swans are a whole new level of psycho, though, bro. Like,
yeah,
there's goose and there's swan, and swan is. There was a like a televangelist studio up in Irving, Texas, and they had this huge pond in the back where they would do the like the complete submersion baptisms. And they had to cancel them during the spring because they had like 4 pairs of swan that when the preacher would come to baptize the people, the swans would attack everybody. Swans are, yeah.
Okay, right, here's one question. This is for Jack. I want Jack to answer this question. All Do you form a corporation in Dakota, Rhode Island, or Nevada, or just file in your state because it's easy? Jack, this is you.
Tax attorney and CPA. I don't know. I'm not going to know. I can't know your situation. And no matter how much detail you give me, I will never really know your situation. You need a tax attorney and a CPA to help you make structural decisions for your business.
And if you're asking
the question,
you should
just record me saying that and have a button for it, you know?
And if you're asking the question, you're probably not at the level where it matters.
That's probably true as well, because you would already have a tax attorney.
You would already have the lawyer.
Don't make that decision yourself. If you have to ask the question, you're not qualified. I'm qualified to make the decision for myself, and I would still consult with my CPA and my tax attorney. If I was starting a new venture and I was going to set up an LLC or an LLP or an S-Corp or whatever, I would always say, this is my rationale. This is why I think I'm doing what I'm going to do what I think. Tell me where I'm wrong. That's why you pay that sumbitch $300, $400 an hour, because that one 15-minute call that you get billed an hour for, that he says, don't do this because can save you hundreds of thousands of dollars across the life cycle of that business. If not, prevent your ass from getting put out of business. Like, so, hey, you know, if you're going to fundraise into this business, you might want to wait till after the first of the year so you have time to liquidate the fundraising. Like, that would just be one example. I can't possibly know if you're in that situation or not.
And contextually speaking here, this decision, while important, is not the most important decision you will ever make for your business, because if you set up one way for one reality and your reality changes, you can change. And so it's not like you've made this decision for the rest of your business life. Like, my business for 5 years has been set up a specific way. And I am going through a bit of not an audit like an IRS audit, but we are auditing the system to see if it still fits. Right? So if I end up needing to adjust in 2025, I will adjust in 2025 and we will get that done. It's not going to hurt my feelings. And nobody who does business with me will even know that happened.
No. And there's no reason to even tell them.
Right.
Well, they don't care.
So people feel like you make this decision for the rest of your life. You're making it for the reality that's there. And yes, I did have a pecker face story. Because we're all 12.
We're all 12. But you weren't 12 when you murdered the bird.
Mm-mm. I actually didn't murder the bird because I was keeping the bird from ripping my face apart. Okay. Somebody else helped me murder the bird, but I won't implicate
who it was. He had an accomplice.
I was like, I need you to break its neck right now.
Well, the good thing is they didn't have that long.
And the sharp thing in my face from moving.
Yeah. They do have that long neck. So
well, it's more durable than you think. I'll just put it that
way.
Oh,
I can imagine.
Yeah. The best part was they tried to get me to get rabies shots for it, which they were going to have to inject into my face. Actually, it was this side. They were going to inject, like, all of that stuff around the site. Okay, yeah. So Jack is already confused. And I hear them, like, doing the equivalent of urgent care center Googling for a solution. And they're like, we don't know. So just send her to the hospital and get a rabies shot. That's what I hear them say.
There is no species of bird that can contract rabies. And birds do not carry rabies.
So I know why, too. So I'm like, you know what? I know where the body is. We're going to get that tested before we're going to spend thousands of dollars on a rabies shot in my face.
Yes.
And so I go to the – and I had to stop by the veterinarian's office to pick up, like, flea medication. So I walk in there, and I've got, like, you know, a bandage all over this side of my face and, you know, like, wrapped around my head. They flushed it out. I'm on antibiotics. And I see the veterinarian. I'm like, hey, can a blue heron give me rabies? And he doesn't even look at me. He goes, no, their body temperature is too high for that to – And he stops and he looks at me like, what happened?
I got pecker face.
At the veterinary's office as the pecker face, although they didn't call me that for a while. But yeah, so I learned it was impossible for birds to carry it because their body temperature runs too hot.
Okay.
Now I know why.
I didn't know why. I just figured because they were avian versus mammalian and that they didn't cross that border. But I guess that's why it doesn't cross the border.
Mm-hmm. And Amy, thank you for the super chat.
No, I'm not getting a rabies shot in the face because I got pecker faced. I'm not doing it. I'll take that risk. You might need a tetanus shot, but the tetanus shot scam is it takes longer for the inoculation to form the antibodies than for the tetanus to actually infect you.
And you can't get just tetanus. There's like three or four other things in it now.
Yeah.
I actually keep up on my tetanus because I live where I live and I do.
Can you get a tetanus shot that's not like a DTaP though?
I don't know if you can anymore. The last time I got one, you could. So I don't know that you can.
Because I'd never say that all vaccines don't work because that's one that did. I mean, there's more people died of tetanus in World War I than died of bullets and bombs. Right. So there's that one worked, but it also this idea that you get an injury so you go get a tetanus shot, that doesn't work. And no doctor will tell you otherwise if pushed.
Tetanus lives in the soil.
Like parvo.
It's just there. And it can also be on rusty nails. But the rusty nails thing is what the impetus is for getting you your tetanus shot every time you go in there. That's what they talk about. But like if I get a wound and I like dig it into the soil here, that could do it as well. Which is probably why that was a big problem in World War I.
It has to be a deep puncture, though. Is my understanding. And I don't know exactly what deep means. Obviously, through the epidermis and dermis, at least, and into further in. But that's my understanding. It has to get, like, it's almost like it's injected, and it gets into an environment where it can propagate itself. It's kind of like botulism in a way that there's a hell of a lot of it out there, but it normally doesn't bother us.
Anytime I've had sutures, they've always done a tetanus.
Which, again, if you got tetanus from that cut, like, and it's weird too. Like, they'll literally, you have to say you were injured to get one, but then they're trying to like dart you as you go past the CVS with an mRNA. It's like there's a dude in the window with a blowgun, you know? Like,
hey, is black locust a nitrogen fixer like redbud?
Yes.
Yes. It's also a really freaking thorny, annoying tree. And redbud is a lot less annoying.
Correct. Okay, what's
my other options that I'm not going to hate?
You won't hate black locust if you manage it properly.
Okay.
The trees you plant will produce these thorns about this big. What will produce the bigger thorns that will piss you off and annoy you are the suckers. So if you're grazing or mowing around your black locust, I have black locust everywhere. It's not a problem. But when they're little, about that big, coming up from seed, the ducks eat them. Sheep will eat the hell out of them. Ben Falk, his property near Mad River in Vermont is 10 acres, and it's completely circumferenced in black locust as a fuel wood, but he has no problems with it spreading because he grazes the sheep around the perimeter of the property. So they eat all the baby locust trees. So it's a management issue because the suckers and the seedlings, like when something's a baby, it's most vulnerable. So it's most like, I'm going to kill you. But I will tell you the one to stay away from is honey locust.
Honey locust.
Because the thorns are this big. And they have thorns on the thorns. And when you break the thorn open, there's literally thorns in the thorns. And so what people do, they go out and they buy the thornless honey locust. Well, that tree will be thornless, but every baby it makes
on top of it
will not be thornless.
Yeah, and right? It will pop tires. It will go through your foot. I know somebody who almost lost her toe because it went through and got her bone through a boot. Those things are nasty, nasty, nasty thorns. So Ferguson was here, and he was like, can I take this thorn off your honey locust, Nicole? I'm like, you can take the whole damn tree if you want. Like, it's a battle when we go to take those out. And he's like, I just want to show my customers why they don't want honey locust.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, you can have it.
But, like, we had the project we did in Arkansas for Alcoa, that they brought a bush hog out because there were so many honey locust seedlings in the pasture. We couldn't walk through it without getting tore up. And it put holes in the tire and flattened the tire on the bush hog. I mean, flattening a lawn tractor tire is no big deal, but flattening like a commercial tractor tire, that's some serious shit. I would not let it near. I have a couple thornless ones, but the way things are here, they're not going to spread. I mean, they can't get deep soil, but we had them on one of our stripping bags on our property in Pennsylvania, and it was impenetrable. When we cut it all, we thought we'll get rid of them. We cut them all down. And then they suckered into like this screen of death and destruction. They're evil. Stay away from the honey locust. Black locust, if you manage it right, it's one of the best fuel woods. It's one of the best timber woods. It's one of the best tool making woods out there. I think Nick Ferguson and I have a video floating around somewhere. We talk about black locust and nothing else for like 2.5 hours.
What do you guys think about? I respectfully don't like it. I still don't like it because the thorns hurt. They grow on the bark of the dang tree.
Yeah.
So you got to deal with that. And so, yes, they make great firewood. You're not wrong. But I got to deal with those thorns. And I've been poked too many times by them.
So here's what I did. Once the tree's about that big around, about 3-4 inches round and grown up, if I'm going to use it for any kind of fuel purpose or whatever, I pollard it, keep it above the height of like my shoulders because it's easy to drop and then let it grow back from there. And all the way up that trunk, I just take a pair of pruners and prune off all the thorns, they don't grow back.
What we know here is that Jack is willing to spend time pruning his black locust bark, and I am not.
I have like 50 of them. It's not like I have 5,000 of them. I mean, there's a big difference there. And again, you guys know I've got like 10 inches of soil at the deepest. I don't know what will happen in deep-ass clay soils that John has. It might run away on you. She's right. Red bud, you can get all the nitrogen fixing you want, and lots of bees too, John. Red bud.
What about privet? What do you guys think about privet?
No.
Sheep love it. Goats love it. Like, they eat the crap out of it here. It does take over the world, but it's actually really good fodder for my animals.
And it doesn't hurt them because it's poisonous to people.
They say that, but yeah, no, it doesn't hurt them. They eat it. They're eating the crap out of it right now.
I've got it everywhere. It's invasive as shit.
So I've got some
invasive as shit.
I've got some property lines semi shaded sometime, and it seems like privet will work there, as will bamboo.
I like bamboo.
Yeah. Yes.
Bamboo you can contain.
I'm not even worried about containing it. I'm gonna mow it when it comes to the edge where I don't want it. And we're gonna just chemically kill it if we have to, or bring goats in again, or I mean maybe sheep.
Sheep will eat it.
Yeah,
everything will eat it when it sprouts. But if you mow where its edge line is, it's not hard to maintain. But if you let it go once it starts sending out shoots and they get the big shoots, they'll tear up your mower. So you got to.
Yeah, we can bush. I've got a bush hog and commercial mowers and stuff.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, he can.
Bamboo is useful, man. That's another really useful.
I started looking at bamboo a couple of years ago, and I've not put any on the property yet, but there's hundreds of kinds. There's three, if not four, really big bamboo farms right outside of Nashville. You can get bamboo that's 1 inch around. You can get bamboo that's 6 inch. You can get stuff that's 20 feet, 60 feet, cold hardy through the snow. It'll stay. Like, there's so much of it, different types.
Jeff Lawton, the first thing he does when he puts a dam in is plant the whole dam breast with bamboo because it'll lock the breast down. But since it's a grass, it only goes about 4 inches deep. It won't get into the dam wall and cause any kind of damage like trees and bushes will. And so by planting the whole dam breast with bamboo, once it spreads out and locks in, you're not going to get any, you know, pioneer species trees or shrubs that are going into your dam wall and causing damage, getting into your key point or whatever. I think your dam doesn't really have a dam wall, though. It probably doesn't matter for you.
But that makes sense, having been at Jeff's place, because that's what William and Billy both said, was put clumping bamboo back there on that dam.
Yep. It won't go anywhere. I'm talking about the breast, not the bamboo, right? Like, it just won't, because if you've ever tried to dig it up, you know, because when I was a kid, we found a big clump of it in the woods in Jacksonville, and we thought we were going to put it in the backyard. If you try to dig it up, you'll understand why it ain't going nowhere. It's not doable, in my opinion. It's crazy the amount of rhizome root structure those things have. You need a piece of equipment to peel off a piece of it.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Hey, Kevin says, when red buds are blooming, it's time to look for morels. Almost time here. We found morels on my actual property this week.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
Which was had never happened before. It doesn't mean they weren't there. And then all my morel spots haven't had morels, but I was sitting here working last night, and Nighthawk walked in and held one up and said, is this a morel? And he found one on his property. So what I learned is when the soil gets to 55 degrees is when they start popping, which is coincidentally also when it's time to plant beet seeds. So... apparently I need to get my beet seeds in before I head to your place in the morning. We'll see if I actually get that done.
I put beets and carrots in on the same day always.
Yeah. Have you put them in yet?
No.
Yeah.
I've got 100 starts out here still that I've got to put in. I've put 100 in this weekend. But I'll bet there's over 100 starts right now for raised beds to put in too.
Oh, maybe we should have a raised bed planting session at Self Reliance Festival.
Everybody's always like, what do you do? Here they are. Do it however you want to do it. I don't care. Let's see what works.
Yep. Kevin says, to find morels, learn the trees. Very symbiotic relationship. Well, we've had a lot of fun with the morels this week just because I hadn't found them for a few years. But it took me 12 years to find my first morels years ago. It was 2020. I found my first morels. And that took me 12 years, and I haven't found one since until this week. So,
we were getting all the dump trucks of wood mulch from the power company, and we would ride we had the motocross track here, and we'd run super fast, and it would just fog the bowl out with dust. So we started taking all those wood chips and putting them on the long runs where the cars would run really fast, the razors, and it was shaded back there, and the canopy would drop water down there every morning, and Chef would go back there, and it all happened like in one night. You would come out, and there was just as far as the eye could see on that trail with just mushrooms, 3-4 different kinds coming out of that wood mulch, and it did it for years. It still does a little bit, but not like it was.
Yeah, that's always fun to watch. I love watching the mushrooms come out. It's been a really crummy oyster mushroom year here for us. So
I get
don't
jealousy.
Know why.
I get jealous of y'all. The only mushrooms I have here are the ones that will kill you or the ones that will kill you if you mix them with alcohol.
Well, they should just buy TSP East out here and then you can come mushroom.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the number was, but I watched a prepper show or something, and they were talking about the mushrooms in Kentucky, and if there's 200 mushrooms in Kentucky, 180 of them can kill you dead or something. I mean, it was a pretty wild number.
Yeah.
So I just buy them from the grocery store. The picture this app works really well.
Yeah. I'm no expert. There's certain ones that I know, and those are the only ones that I will touch. You know, I grew up, we used to harvest spongies, puffballs, morels, chanterelles, maitakes, and chicken in the woods. Like, so I know those six. Like, I look at it, like, I know exactly what that is, and I know what turkey tail is, but you don't eat that. It's medicinal. Pretty much everything else, I'm like, I don't, LBM, that's just short for you're going to die. Like, for those who don't know the terminology, LBM means little brown mushroom. Because there's like a billion species of them. And a lot of times when you do like compost pits and whatever and you're using straw, you get these little LBMs. And I can't remember what they're called, but they are okay to eat apparently. But if you mix them with alcohol, they will like kill you dead. They produce a toxin. And I mean, like combined in, you're like, you had an old fashioned and then you ate mushrooms. That's just too likely to happen to me. I ain't messing with that.
Yeah. I don't need to mess with something like that either.
So well, I also wonder, like, you can, in certain food combinations, end up actually producing small amounts of alcohol in your system without consuming alcohol. So it just seems like you're playing craps with your life, and I don't do that.
Someone asked if bamboo will grow here, and yes, it will.
Oh, yeah.
You see it all over the place.
Yeah. Well, we have cane that grows here, too, that's basically bamboo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just growing along the rivers and whatnot.
It's showing up in waterways. We have alligators now too that are overwintering.
You have alligators?
We have alligators, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, so morels are even somewhat toxic if not cooked. Yeah, you're supposed to cook morels and not eat them raw. There's a morel lookalike that when you cut it is solid. And I have never seen one until somebody in our morel group started posting. They were like, I found false morels.
Mm-hmm.
And they do look different from the outside, too. But every time I find them, I'm like, are you hollow all the way through or not?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of stuff out there that can kill you. We were doing some foraging on my property, me and David, and he's like, well, what is this? I'm like, that's death camas. He's like, what? I'm like, that's a death camas. He's like, no. I'm like, no, that's death camas. And they grow right in where the wild hyacinth grow. And they both produce a bulb. And the bulb, if you eat it, will actually taste pretty similar. And one is delicious and is good for you. And the other one will kill you. So the top of the plant is really obviously different, but the bulbs are not.
Somebody asked alligators where, right here, Tennessee River, also known as Kentucky Lake. I believe they said there's one over by the power plant here. They've overwintered. We also have a black panther. There's been several of those on game cameras over the last few years, about 45 minutes from here. TVA says we have no less than 9 mountain lions. Of course, they know that they have DNA on 9 because they released them. They're probably collared.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm guessing the alligators must be just mud burrowing or something and getting deep enough in there to make it through.
I mean, they've had sharks too. Sharks have made it all the way up.
Bulls, yeah. Yay, bull sharks.
Oh boy. Well, we got fire ants too. I lived here until about 3 years ago with no fire ants, and now there's actual ant hills here, and I'm running around with the Medina orange oil. And you know what makes the perfect measure, by the way, for that stuff? Gallon. A TSP branded shot glass.
Yes.
Where are you guys buying that? Because it's not on Amazon anymore, is it? They're not shipping it?
I got it on Amazon.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, that one. Is that new one?
That's it. It's just it's so small you can't really see.
Yeah, so I was like, what do I have that'll measure 2 ounces? I'm like, I know what I have.
If you leave a little space, you get 2 ounces perfectly.
Yeah.
Is that the El Fuego stuff that Jack used to talk about?
Yeah, but they don't make that anymore, so it's just the orange oil, and you can make the anti-fuego if you want, or you can just use the orange oil.
Okay,
it's basically compost, orange oil, and liquid molasses. And the theory of that is it kind of helps the land recover, so you murder the ants, and then all the soil organisms come in attracted by the compost tea and the molasses and consume the bodies and kind of restore the – it's a limited amount of damage, though, is what I found. Like, if you need to nuke ants that have invaded your raised bed, you need to nuke them, like, 2 weeks before you plant. And it'll degrade. But if you pour it right on something that was just planted, it will kill it.
Yeah, we've got them coming up. We used protein tubs for potatoes last year.
Yeah.
And we have several of them that have them there. And then any place where we've overcovered with wood mulch, they really like the wood mulch for some reason.
Yeah, they like anything that stays dry wet and loose. That's why they like compost piles. I've talked to people that for like their raised beds and their wicking beds and stuff like that that are contained, like container gardens, they take like a water bottle and they put a little bit of the Amdro that looks like a pellet that doesn't have that stink you smell from a mile away in the bottle. and the worker ants will go in the bottle and take it and feed it to the queen. But it won't spread through your whole system, and pretty much ants are the only thing that will go in there to get it. But I just use the oil.
Yeah, I use the oil too. Good choice for quick growing tree or bush to plant on contour that can be used as a windbreak. Where?
All of them.
Where? All of them. Plant all of them.
Any tree that grows in your area will act as a windbreak if you plant enough of them. But your evergreens are your best windbreaks because the boughs all the way down. But you don't get much of a windbreak from a single line of trees. You really don't. Like, it just doesn't really work. You need multiple layers to get much of a windbreak out of it.
Yeah, Colorado.
So guys always say, how much property do I need? Way more than you think. Set it off several acres so you can run acres of pine, so that when you cut those generationally, 15 years as pulp, 30 years as poles, and if you run through and cut that acre, they will immediately reseed that acre, and then a couple years later you can cut that. And when I say acre, I mean acre width by acres across. That way you always have those trees coming up. So if you're on a roadway, you don't see headlights and you don't hear any of the road noise if you have your pine. You could do it with bamboo also, but pine will give you a cash crop.
So in Montana, when we did the Seb Holzer workshop with Paul Wheaton, they, you know, big open spaces, lots of wind, lots of evaporation. And instead of using trees as wind blocks, what Seb did was mounds of soil with trees planted on top to hold them. Mm-hmm. And that was his wind block solution. And he said, trees will not block the wind the way that you think they will. And they certainly won't block the wind in the winter when the leaves fall off, when you really need the wind block. So that was his, is basically windrow piles that were like 2 meters, 6 foot, you know, 7 foot tall, but they weren't hoogles. They were, you know, kind of like 67 degree angle, like a hoogle, but the top of them were several foot wide and flat like a plateau. And then they planted trees into them more to hold the mound together than to block the wind. And so dude knows his stuff. If you guys can grow shit in the Alps, then you can, you know how to block wind.
I love that dude's last name.
You guys should look up hedgerows too. How they build hedgerows. It's pretty cool. You can still do that stuff. I mean, they couldn't get old tanks through hedgerows.
Poor Paul. He was here and he left, and then I mentioned his hero.
Yeah, well, he'll be back. He'll be back. He's an interesting dude. It was actually really fun to go out and see Wheaton Labs in person. Like,
it was pretty cool. You've seen it much more recently than I have. I saw it at the beginning, but it's pretty cool.
Well, and I got to go look at the Wafatis in person, which was neat. Because you see pictures of things, but like really experiencing it is a different thing. But he has, for privacy, he has a big old mound between the road and his property, so you can't see what they're doing there. Because that just eliminated any noisy neighbor problems, basically.
Yeah.
Did he put that mound there, or was it there?
No, he put it there.
He put it there.
He said he was getting complaints about whatever, like nothing crazy, but, you know, too much interest. And he's like, we just built a mound.
No, you don't need to see.
Yeah.
No, if I was a business.
That's the plan here.
Go ahead.
That's the plan here. If they cut this road out, they keep saying they're going to take, they claim 120 feet back. So they're going to take those pine trees on the edge and take all that dirt to the four lane. So that's the plan, is to put a 6 foot mound, just like you were talking about, and just super plant it with trees and vegetate it.
And that'll work really well because you have the elevation in your favor there. So a 6 foot mound is like an 18 foot mound from the building.
See, now that's where you might want some honey locust.
And you're not going to get past that mound either. Yeah, we'll put all kinds of thorny shit on the outside of that.
I'll tell you it would work right there, too, though. Somebody mentioned them, Osage Orange.
Yep.
Osage Orange. You can get those for free. Go out and get the big green sticky balls. Throw them in a 5 gallon bucket. Leave them in there for a couple of days. They'll fall apart. All the seeds will come out. And plant like one every 6 inches. In the first year, they'll grow into a whip about 6 foot tall. And then go fold them like counterways all over each other, and they'll send up the next season massive amounts of shoots and do that again. In about 3 years, you'll have a fence that no one's going through. Pigs ain't going through it.
Yeah.
And if they do go through it, they're going to ER.
Now, that would make a really good class at SOE if they ever cut that down. People planting
those
honeymoon.
Those sage orchards? Hell,
yeah.
Put it
and
in before
about
I cut it down.
6 months later, people weaving those sage orange.
Yeah, you can do that with willow, too.
Yeah.
But willow doesn't have giant thorns on it.
Correct.
Right.
I mean, I can get you, if you ever need it, I can get you the seed for that because we have Osage all over here.
You got to keep them away from cattle, though, because they'll eat them. And if they eat like one or two, it's no big deal. They'll eat enough of them, it'll impact them. My limited experience with cattle, I learned like all kinds of ways cattle will kill themselves.
Yeah,
they'll kill themselves with high tannin acorns. They'll kill themselves with Osage. Yeah. I've never seen an animal.
Like
so
a horse.
Intent, a toddler is less intent on suicide than a cow. I don't get how they survive.
Will anything else, any other animal concern with Osage Orange?
I don't know.
My sheep haven't really messed with it.
Okay.
But I don't have
they're
like
a browser
whole either.
You know, but I know cattle will do it. We had one cow almost die. We had to stick a freaking tube down its throat and off gas. Why would you shoot the cow and eat it? Wouldn't that just be easier? We got a gambrel. Let's go. Let's make some steaks.
I actually have a cow gambrel here. Don't have a pig gambrel, but I have a cow gambrel. So
after that, I don't want cows. And after being at Ben Falk's and seeing fly strike on a sheep, I never want a wool sheep. I would do what you're doing with the self-shedding hair sheep. But I... Like, he says, this is as bad as it gets. I'm like, well, that's a reason not to do it. It was one of the most revolting things I've ever seen in my life. It was.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I learned a lot about fly strike because one of my rabbits had ear mites so bad there was crusty stuff on her ears.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that fly strike? Because if you get that wet, it makes it worse. And then I used John's trick of giving her ivermectin and it was gone in a week. So
ivermectin will do it. You could do it with olive oil. You can do it all kinds of stuff. What I've been using is I've got that purple spray stuff that you spray on dogs to keep the flies off.
Oh.
No, it's just like for flies. Hmm. I spray that in there and the ear mites are gone the next day.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, we did. We gave them all ivermectin in their food this time because it was bad enough that I was like,
Yeah.
So you can just smear it on if you got the paste or the injectable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or oral, just take a dropper or whatever, just apply it in there. Or if you're worried about it, gloves, and then just rip your glove off. But that'll take care of it.
Yeah, I used to do olive oil, and I will again, but this was just, I hadn't looked at the rabbits in a while, in like a month or 6 weeks. And that's a bad one.
The olive oil it never like went away. It would be gone and appear to be gone, but it would always come back with olive oil or mineral oil. But with the ivermectin, it wipes it out.
Wipe it out.
When I switch cages out, I'll put a new cage in place and I'll take the orange, the old cage, and I torch it. I literally just use like the weed dragon, and it's going to kill anything.
Oh, you don't destroy it. You flame.
Yeah, torch the wire cage because I don't have wood on the cages.
Yeah.
And it burns off all the hair and webs and stuff.
That makes sense. The sheep that Ben had, it was end of fall, it was end of summer, so you really didn't want to shear it, but we ended up like having a class, the students sheared a sheep, and then his wife, now girlfriend at the time, is some kind of herbalist, and she had some sort of herbal oil that we would smear on it, and when you smeared it where you had sheared it, it was like a horror movie. It was just the maggots coming out of the skin. And it was instant. It was like as soon as you put it on, it was like, and you're like, no sheep. And he kept trying to convince me, it's really not that bad. I'm like, yeah, it is. There it is right there. Not what I'm looking for in an animal.
That sounds awful.
Well, it's gross.
So it's called, is it purple wound spray for dogs that you're talking about?
It's like a purple bottle. It's about this big. Comes from Tractor Supply. It's a spray, and it's for flies. It's just you put it on dogs to keep flies off. You put it on horses and cattle. It's right by the fly traps in Tractor Supply. I think it's about $15 a bottle.
I gotta find this.
And I put it on our girls on the dog's ears when the flies get after the tips of the ears. So I just spray those ears and it takes care of it. And I had a rabbit had ear mites and I said, I wonder what this will do, and it completely took care of it.
Yeah, I'm not finding it on their website, but
I've been using it for 2 years. It's just a fly spray. I'll send you a picture of it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. You can just show me in person when I get there tomorrow.
Yep.
Is it Repel-X?
Maybe. No? Maybe.
I don't know if it's purple. I want to know what this is now.
Yeah, I know. We all do.
Purple flying insect killer. That can't be it. No. I don't know. We need to know. We need to know what this is.
Inquiring mind. We're like, flies? Be gone?
I'm seeing an Amazon item of the day here, man.
Get it at Tractor Supply or Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that purple stuff works really so well. Somebody knows who that purple, what that purple stuff is. I love it when we tell each other tips. It's like that purple stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. So, so John, you ready for SRF?
Yeah. Yeah, we're always ready for whatever.
Yeah. It's kind of fun what happens at the SOE compound because there's always something going on there. And John's like, yeah, do it. Go for it. So.
Yeah, what are you guys got planned? Anything special other than what we've talked about before with it? Like any kind of new things that, you know, last minute people might want to come?
Yeah, this starts on Thursday, and it is a butchering class with Hand Hume Farm. Did we tell you about that?
No.
Oh, no. So these guys cure meat in ways like beyond just bacon and ham. And so the first day is processing the pig, like just unaliving the pig. And scraping and scalding. The second day, we're going into how to cure various kinds of meats, including salamis and stuff. So that's going to be really cool. We're not going to do blood sausage on this round, but there are still, like, I think 4 seats left right now at SelfRelianceFestival.com for that. And it's not a small price tag. It's $650, but you are getting this class at, like, at a really good price. And on Friday after the class, they take stuff they've cured from former classes and do a charcuterie platter.
Yeah.
With wine. So that's happening too at the end of the class. And it's going to be really, really cool. Like in addition to all the cool stuff that's going on at the festival and the permaculture kitchen session, like the how self-reliant is your kitchen by Alan Booker. You know, Alan Booker, right?
Mm-hmm.
That session is one of the ones that a lot of people, male and female, are super excited about because he's integrating permaculture principles with kitchen design with how to manage the stuff coming off of your homestead.
Wow.
Because you're not just buying dried herbs at the store, right? You have to have a process for when to harvest it, how to handle it, how to make space in your kitchen for that, how it builds in, how it regenerates itself. And so that one is going to be, that's Saturday morning. That's going to be one of the ones we live stream for free. Because we're going to do the first few sessions for free. And then if people want to buy digital passes, they can. That one's going to be fan-freaking-tastic. And I can't wait. And he has a book coming out on that topic later this year. So
That's fascinating to me because I really know him mostly from like his work with like epigenetics and plant land races and stuff like that. I didn't know he got into that other side of things. He kind of burned my brain when I listened to his seminar Paul did with him on epigenetics. I'm like, well, I have to start changing some practices because of that. And I was listening to a dude, he's totally worth looking up if you like a geek out with plant stuff, named James White. He's not the James White you met at my workshop last year. He's a PhD,
right?
Plant geneticist. And he was talking about they're finding now that there are bacteria inside the cells of the plants, and the plant can't grow without the bacteria inside the cells of the plants. And that the longer the seed is stored, the more of the bacteria inside the cells in the seed die off, and that's why your viability goes down. And it goes way beyond that. I listened, John Kempf has a podcast. I can't think of what it's called right now. I think it's Understanding Ag might be. And he had this guy on, and I just found him in like the playlist on for his podcast, and I was listening to it, and I listened to it 3 times, and I still don't completely understand it. It was,
yeah.
They're finding protozoa and algae inside the plants that are part of the epigenetics of the plant.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I think he may be back in the fall, I don't know for sure, on something more along that lines on the epigenetics side.
Since I do fall, you have to make him come.
Yes.
I have to.
You're coming this fall for sure?
I'll come this fall. I can come in the fall. I can't do spring.
We'll announce it on Sunday next week that you are coming.
Okay.
I've got a whole thing going out about that. But yeah. So he's just such a good speaker. We may have Reisner next fall too.
Okay.
So we Reisner. Could do He's gonna attend this one, and if somebody gets sick, he's gonna hop on stage.
Reisner is like a guy that Nick Ferguson and I, after we sat on a panel with him, looked at each other and said, "Do you feel like a moron now?" Like, yeah, it's like you're smart. Teaching college algebra and Albert Einstein walks in and takes over your board. Like, you just don't even fucking know what to say. Like, everything he has an answer for, and it's all legit, and it's encyclopedic. And I don't know how a dude smokes that much weed and is that smart, but he is. It is what it is, man.
Well, he might need to slow down the old noggin long enough to get the concepts out. Like,
he might be one of those guys. I mean, I swear to God, I get a contact high from the guy. Like, I stand next to him, and I'm like, wow. Everything got a little brighter.
Okay, for those playing along at home, Jack, we have found the stuff. It's called Bug Block. It's the purple stuff. It shall forever be known as the purple stuff, the purple spray.
The purple stuff.
But, So there you go.
Bug Block.
Yeah.
Jordan. Just you.
Make it
say,
happen.
Say, how can I? If you say, how can I, you will have an answer.
Yep. I do a live every night at 9:00. Come on every night and tell me you want to come.
So somebody who is in the LFTN community passed away this month quite suddenly. And I'll be talking about it next week more. It's sad, but we're at least glad we know what happened, because he just disappeared at the beginning of the month. And his son said, you know, I have a kind of job where it's hard to get away to come to things. And so I haven't been up to meet everybody, even though he participates. And he kind of regretted that a little bit.
Mm.
So I'm just throwing that one out there. Like, time is not on your side. If you want to go do something, go do it.
Make the most of your dash, because your dash gets shorter every day. I don't care if you live to be 100, your dash gets shorter. And like, we need to accept that the majority of us, no matter how well we take care of ourselves, the very last few years, you're not gonna be able to do much. Do it while you can. Take the vacation while you can. Go someplace with your kids while you can. Start a business while you can. Get out of freaking the states that suck while you can. Like, take an impetus by that story right there. Make shit happen in your life. Or, as they say in LFTN land, get shit done.
Who is Jordan G? I interviewed him in March. He's not the Take the Ride guy, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the got the duck, all ducks go to bed guy?
No,
well, it could be. I don't think so, though.
That's not his
name. Have a better icon than a J. That dude, that's Goldshaw.
Goldshaw, yeah. This is Stop Being Fat. Is that this guy?
Tell us who you are, Jordan.
We should
catch
know.
Catch up on the stream, bro.
It's Dark Horse Production. Dark Horse Production. That's not the paraglider guys, right?
No,
okay. It's a different guy.
No.
I had the big beard. Shit, dude. I don't remember who you are.
I had the big beard. Can you be more? What did he interview you about?
I have a big beard.
We all had.
We all have big beards, bro. Have you been paying attention? What do you do?
Yo, he's got to follow us up with a link on that one.
You know what he's doing now is he's having fun with this, and I don't blame him. Nerd, been to Iraq.
You should know who I am.
You interviewed him.
Got it. Yeah, well, there's only like 65 of you dudes.
Yeah. You got to be more specific when you talk to somebody that talks to 100 people a week.
If you want to know when
I met
October...
you at a prepper expo in Salt Lake City in 2010. Okay. Right. You know how many brain cells I've killed since 2010? I have no idea who you are.
I just assume people don't know who I am when I walk up to them. I'll be like, hi, my name is, we met here. Just, you know, I'm going to assume you don't know that. And then they can pretend that they remember who I am.
I do that all the time. Just give them enough information that they're going to remember where it was.
I learned that in public policy work, because I was interacting with politicians all the time. And that's what, like, you can always see this slight look of relief on a politician's face when you do that, because they're like, oh, good. I'm not going to be like called to the table for not remembering one of my millions of people.
That's why we have name tags at my workshops, and we tell people to put your name on both sides of the tag. They're ride-on tags, because I swear to God, if you wanted to create kinetic or like unendable energy, you would just put little power generators on name tags. Have you noticed that? Like, no matter what you do, you turn the lanyard around, whatever, it always flips over to where your name's not showing. Put it on both sides.
And your name on your name tag should also have your avatar picture, because when we do a live, we see like an eraser tip size. And yeah, a lot of times, like, whatever I think, I'm like, why does he have such a weird avatar? It's not at all what we think it is.
Oh,
like, okay. And you guys should name all your names should be the same on all your social media platforms.
Yeah.
That's always so. Well, and when you introduce yourself to me this weekend, so a lot of you, we're going to meet for the first time at Self Reliance Festival this weekend. We have a lot of first timers coming. It's going to be awesome.
That's cool.
And you've heard about us on these live streams, and we know you as Green Country Agroforestry or whatever.
Yeah, we don't know you.
But it's okay to say, hey, I'm, you know, Mike, my, you know, my other name, or you know me as blah, 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 you know.
Nitrogen and also picture. a lot of times I'll have a passing conversation with somebody who I speak with regularly on the internet, and then after the fact on a live next week, they'll be like, hey, it was super nice to meet you at SRF. And I'm like, why didn't you put those two together? Make sure we know who you are, because you'll get a very different experience that way.
I've met a lot of people at events where they'll tell me who they are. And if they do mention like my screen name or my handle is, I'm like, oh, I know you really well. Up until that moment, you're just another person. And it's not that I don't care. It's that when you meet a lot of people, you can only sort the files so well in your brain, you know, especially like when you're at it. One thing you guys need to know, when you're at an event and you're talking to people who are speakers and shit, especially before they present, especially very close to when they're going
to
present, they will not remember a
freaking
thing you said 2 hours up till their presentation. Because I don't know about you, Nicole, when I'm presenting at an event, when I'm done, then I'm just like, oh, somebody bring me an old fashioned, and I'm just chilling shit after that. Up until that point, I'm going through what I'm going to say, and you're talking to me, and I'm like, should I put this, should I move that slide? I hate to admit it, but
is that the right, like, attention grabber for the beginning of my presentation? Yeah. No, that's 100%. I've told people on my podcast, if you meet, like, come up to me at an event, introduce yourself, I want to meet you. But and don't, Jordan, do it 10 minutes before I go on stage, because I won't meet you. I will nod, I will smile, I will be polite, and I have no idea that you just talked to me. Because I'm already presenting at that point.
And also, Jordan, it's not that you're a nobody. It's that you have a J with a green circle representing your social footprint. I do a live every night, and when I get off the live, I have a minimum of 10,000 people have watched the live. And by the next, and on a weekend one, I'll get, you know, 100,000 people that I interact with on a live video. And there could be 12 Jordans on there. It's not that you're insignificant or that you're a nobody. You just need to put a picture up there so that it's always the same.
Or you need a handle that's so unique that you can pull it off with a B. Like Builder of Castles. I have no idea what the dude's real name is, but he's on all my streams and all. If he walks up to me, I'm going to be like, I know who you are if you tell me that that's who you are. But I agree with you. Get some sort of little picture icon, something that says who you are, or I don't know, probably the most effective one's a picture of cleavage like that, because men are stupid.
Just look at the Instagram. You'll see some boobs, and when you actually click the picture, it's not at all boobs. It's not what you thought it was.
No.
Yeah, like Ika Mouse.
Yeah. Where the hell's she been?
I don't know. I haven't seen Ika Mouse in a while. I miss her.
I haven't either. Where's Rachel today? She spoke. Well, I'm usually later in the day.
I think she was on earlier for a second.
Yeah.
But yeah.
K-Bonk. Everybody.
Yeah, I know who K-Bonk is. Original. Yeah.
Black Soldier Flies. That's all I know. Black Soldier Flies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I saw Rachel. We have a Rachel search party going now.
Yeah.
I mean, but see, the Green Country Agri, like if he walks up to you, John, and says, I'm Green Country Agroforestry, you'll make that connection because you've seen him enough and his name is unique enough, right?
Yeah, I've already been on his website today.
Okay, there you go.
And that doesn't mean if you walk up and we don't know, like we haven't seen you on his stream, that we're not going to enjoy meeting you. It's just we have context because I don't know how your brain works, Jack, but like I kind of remember these conversations and pieces of them will come back. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, you were the person who talked about red buds no longer being nitrogen fixers. They're missing a bacteria, something I'm going to have to now go completely nerd out on because I need to learn more about that. Because I really, I've been learning about the medicinal properties of redbud this week, and it's just like that plant has come to my attention as important this week for some reason.
So that dude I mentioned, that James White PhD dude, he said there are thousands of plants that are nitrogen nodule fixers outside of the legume space, but they need the right soil biology.
Mimosa.
So there's your rabbit hole to go.
Mimosa.
I love
Mike, Michael mimosa. Sparks might not be an original name, but we were speaking Michael Sparks yesterday, myself and Gorham. So you need to talk to her about your product. She's got some thing with her truck going on that it seems like you might have a product that will solve.
Yep.
And there's a bunch of bullshit going around the internet. Like when you introduce somebody, they ask what you do because they're trying to evaluate your worth. No, that's how I remember you. I remember the thing that you do. And I'm also evaluating if I can do business to business with you. It's not because I'm trying to evaluate your worth and decide if I'm going to talk to you, but there's so much little just pussy shit all over the internet. Like,
yeah,
fucking victims.
Well, and then you got names like here, you know, Michael, right? Okay. How many Michaels are there? I think if you go into a room with 100 people, there's 10 Michaels in there.
Correct. But I know Michael right? Sparks. If another Michael Sparks shows up, I assume it's our Michael Sparks.
I forgot about that.
You forgot
so
about
there
that.
Are two Michael Sparks who come okay. to Self-Reliance Festival. There are two dudes with the same name who come to Self-Reliance Festival, which is always fun. So you got to look at his picture.
It's not working. What's up?
I can't ever get it to do it.
It's not working.
Your guys is broke.
Still. There you go.
No, yours is broke. That's why it does that.
Rachel's back. She said pecker. We're back to pecker face. That's like, that's all anybody heard this whole stream.
Nicole discovered reactions in the Apple OS.
Yeah. It works on Zoom too, because I did that when I was doing that webinar series, and sure enough, I got my thumbs up. Just there hold you your up. Thumb.
You have are to you have a Mac? Oh, he has a Mac. He's got a Mac, all right?
Yeah, he's got a Mac. Will it do thumbs down?
I don't know.
I'm switching over to an iPhone, finally.
Oh, really?
So. Oh, yours does. Mine does. Oh, I
you
turned mine
it
back
still.
Off.
Hold it still. That's the key.
We have no, I turned my reactions off because I keep them off so that they don't...
Jump in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's... Can we make it rain? I don't remember how. This is the... Yeah. We have devolved. Yeah, there's fireworks.
That's all we're... Let's just play with the special effects.
And I think we can do... I think this is rain. Yeah, make it rain.
Oh, nice. That's what John should be doing right now. How much rain did you get so far? Have you seen?
I don't... We got a lot really quickly, but yeah. Very briefly. But I'll tell you, when I just went outside a minute ago, it looks like everything is 30 or 40 volts brighter than when I came in. Everything is so bright outside right now.
Yeah.
The green is the color of green. Yeah, the color of green is great.
Yes.
I think it's part with rain, like, because if you irrigate an area, it doesn't do that. I think with rain, especially with thunderstorms, there's something that happens to the water with oxygenation or something. Because it is really kind of striking. Like this morning when I went outside, same thing. Everything's just this weird, bright, almost like glowing green.
Man, it seems like there's actually something to this electroculture stuff where they're wrapping the stick with the copper wire.
Yeah.
It really looks like there is something to that.
Could be.
Fun
well, Jack,
fact,
we're coming
lightning.
On 2 hours. Are we going to keep going or are we wrapping?
We should wrap soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this your show today?
This is my show today.
Same.
This is it.
This is the only original show people get from me this week.
No. Oh, from you.
Yeah, from me.
Okay, so for me, no. I got two
yeah,
more
you got
to
them
do
all.
This week. Yeah.
No, I get to go to Camden tomorrow morning and get ready for Self-Reliance Festival, and it's going to be cool. That's all I know.
And then next month, you're going to be down here with me at Exit and Build.
I am. Yeah. And in between there, I have my spring workshop.
Too much work in the spring, man.
Yeah.
Your VIP trailer is already on site. We got the one color jelly bean you requested. And your Red Bull and vodka is in the fridge.
Red Bull and vodka.
No, well, we've had bourbon requests this time. And
this is it.
I went and chose the bourbon yesterday, and we decided to go with Basil Hayden for the bourbon request. Even though they said Woodford, I'm like, Woodford's good, but Basil Hayden is actually maybe a little bit better.
Is that for Angry American?
That is for the pork processing class.
Okay, got it. That's right. That's right.
A-American,
we had both of those conversations.
I have a different one for A-American, as a matter of fact. He doesn't know. Maybe he does if he listens to this, but he's getting a surprise bourbon.
I didn't know he's going to be there. I ain't seen him forever.
Yeah.
Oh, now Jack's coming.
Do I come? Fly on in.
I can't.
There's an extra room in the B&B.
I mean, you got, what's his name with Epigenetics? You got him. I'd like to be there. It's just a hard time of year.
I'll pay for your ticket.
Yeah, that's not the problem. It's not a money thing. It's a time thing.
I know.
You won't even leave. You don't get to say shit. You won't.
I said here. I will pay for your ticket.
Yeah, I'll pay for your ticket, and you bring your ass down here in November.
I know.
Will you?
Oh, I don't know.
Just do 2 weeks worth of work. You know, do 4 weeks worth of work and 3 weeks leading up to it.
And then come down for 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't miss Friday night. If you miss Friday night, don't come. And that's for everybody.
Where do we fly? Where
South
do we fly
Fort Worth.
In? And how far is that from you, an hour?
No.
35 minutes.
35 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
If you get an Uber or whatever, just tell the guy, I'll pay the extra money for the fucking, express lane. Get your ass in there. Because if you use the new express lane they put in, it can literally be a 20-minute drive. If you don't, it can be 35 minutes. It can be an hour and a half. It all depends on what time of day you're coming through. And it's like $5. If I was going there every day back and forth, $10 a day, I'd consider it. Going through there once every few months, I don't even think I'm toll tag ass right in that thing, man.
Did you see New York's bullshit about there's a $20 fee to drive your vehicle during work hours?
No.
You didn't see that? It's apparently real. It's been going on for a month or so now.
What the hell? You know, get out.
Yeah, we said that. That's not how we started the show.
Get out.
Cronin asked if I'll be doing the live. I typically don't do the live during SRF because I'm hanging out with people during SRF. I'm completely thrown off when I've got other voices around me trying to do a live.
Yeah, if you want to hang with John, that's like the only chance you're going to get to do it a little bit is get up to SRF. John doesn't hang. John's always working.
Not. No. Like, if you want to talk to John while he's working, you're going to follow John while he's working and he walks fast. Working. So if you cannot walk fast, you cannot hang out with John while he's working.
No. And he'll look like he's not paying attention to you when he's working, but he actually is.
Yeah, yeah. I am. I'm paying attention.
Yeah,
you're
going to
answer all of a sudden. You're like, fuck, he heard me. Yeah.
So do we need volunteers for the weekend? We can always use helpers, Jose. So Don Gorham is our volunteer manager. But, yeah, we can always use extra hands. I need extra hands tomorrow, but I think I've got that covered now just to make sure we're all set up for the pig because I don't think we're going to see Bob till evening. So he's my partner in crime on that. Did you see Elon Musk's meme? I did not.
It's a true story. That was out this morning. I saw it this morning. Anyway, I don't know if he did it yesterday. But, yeah, he had the 1980s movie poster for Escape from New York with what's his name with the patch on the eye and all.
Snakes
and,
Plissken.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Who's the actor? Is it
Swayze?
Michael Douglas? Or Kurt Douglas? Whoever the hell it was. Maybe. Yeah, but he said, yeah, this is an excellent documentary on New York.
Kurt, there we go, Kurt Douglas.
Kurt Douglas, okay.
All right, well, let's wrap. John, why don't you start?
SOE Tactical Gear is the company website. I do a live on my YouTube channel here every night, literally almost every night, 9 o'clock. We can talk about whatever you guys want. It's driven by your comments. And then I've got 5,000 videos on YouTube. I do 5 video series and 2 full-length podcasts on YouTube every week. So super easy to find.
Awesome. Jack?
So I am Jack Spirko of the Survival Podcast. You can find me at thesurvivalpodcast.com. I'm also currently marketing my compost course, and the picture that's there if you're watching the video, those are cucumbers that were started 8 days ago. 8 days ago from seed in my compost. So if you want to know how to make that compost, get over to homefoodsystems.com It's a $40 course, and it will radically change your gardening forever.
Awesome. I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee, and get your butt to Camden at selfrelianceFestival.com. You can find all the information about the festival, the workshops that are happening before, and we are doing that this weekend. I'm heading out tomorrow morning to go see Camden. I decided to wait for the tornadoes to blow across the state first this time, and then head out, get all set up, and I want to see you there. If you cannot be there in person, you can get a digital pass. With that, guys, we will see you, gosh, in a month, and make it a great week.
Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. Show you a better way.